Boston Public Radio, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. If you missed the Globe Magazine's Misconduct's All-in-One Career Fix-It Guide, we've given you a reprieve. Here to answer all of your office questions, from how to get hired, to how not to get fired, to whether to have sex with your coworker, and all that. I mean, that is one of the things she answers, is Robin Abrams. You know her as the Globe Magazine's Misconduct columnist, and she blogs for Boston.com. She will take all your office do's and don'ts questions at 877-301-8970. Hello, Robin.
Hello. Good to be here.
You too.
You know what I'm dying to know?
What?
Because everybody, you hear this from all your friends because of the recession.
Yes.
Can't give you a raise now because it's a recession and we have to lay people off and stuff like that. Okay. It's now 2013. Mm-hmm. The recession started in 2007, 2008. Are we still have to put up with this when people go in and ask for raises? You still hear this from bosses all the time. Can't do it. Have to lay off 17 people if I give you a $10,000 raise.
I'm Misconduct. I'm not Cesar Chavez. I can talk about, you know, how to have conversations with your bosses, but you know, I'm sorry if the working class is getting broadly spoken, taken advantage of.
Well, it's everybody.
That's way above my pace.
It's everybody.
Let's start with when you cite a study in your piece, which I was shocked by. Let me read this.
Yes.
This gets back to when you first applied for the job. A study from the University of Idaho suggests that making a joke about wanting $1 million salary at the outset of negotiations actually increases the employer's early bid by 10%?
It is amazing. The effects of what's called priming, that if you ask somebody a question, any sort of numerical question, they're going to sort of anchor that to whatever the last number they heard or saw was. And it's a completely unconscious thing. You can write a number on a blackboard and somebody can come into a room and you can be like, oh, hey, how many channels are there if you get this cable package? And they will give you a number that's anchored to whatever is on the blackboard.
So do you do that with a smile?
Oh,
if you're doing it, you do it with a smile.
You do. It's okay. Like, yeah, no, I want $1 million. But it will actually.
And the subliminal impact will be it'll get you a larger starting salary or raise than you would have otherwise. Well, it says 10%. The employer's early bid by 10%.
That doesn't mean every single employer is going to make
that.
I mean, that's the whole thing about the social sciences. This is a general trend.
Okay.
Tell people how you do go in and ask for a raise.
If I could know how to get more money, I mean. We're all trying to do it. I mean, the best thing is to give a case for it. The most important thing when you take a new job, or for that matter, before you start any negotiations, get your success metrics on the table.
What does that mean in English?
What does that mean in English? It means you can't ask for a raise unless you've done a good job, and you can't prove you've done a good job unless you know how your boss defines good job. Meeting your sales quotas, exceeding your quotas, doing this, doing that. You have got to get people on the table about that.
And so can you
and
do damage?
And then think about what you're willing to do. Think about, you know, if there are non-monetary things. If, you know, maybe the company could buy you a laptop or something like that. You know, give you, do your parking, do your T-pass.
Okay, I've met all the
magic. That kind of thing.
Robin, here's the question.
I don't have the magic answer to getting more money.
Well, I'm going to ask for a magic answer in a second. 877-301-8970. All office do's and don'ts. Okay, I'm ready to go and ask for a raise.
I've met
all the matrices, if that's the word. Whatever you just said
success
a minute ago.
Metrics.
The success metric.
You
I've done all that sort
do.
Of stuff. However, I also know the company's doing okay, whatever company X, even though it's not great. And I'm worried that even though I've done a fabulous job and done everything the boss wanted me to do, that if I go in and ask for a raise, not only am I going to get a no, but the boss is going to think less of me because he or she knows I know the company's not doing great. So do I even go in, even if, hoping that maybe it'll lay the groundwork for the next thing, or do I say, I'm going to do more damage to myself than I'm going to do good? What do you do?
It really depends. I mean, one thing that people tend to get very uptight about is somehow we have this notion that other people, we should never let other people know that we're self-interested. Your boss knows you're there for the money. Unless you're working for someone who's just wildly delusional, which is a whole nother kettle of fish, and it's probably happening to many of us as I speak, they understand, you know, you're doing the tricks for the biscuits, not out of love.
Beautifully put.
And if you want more biscuits, they're going to respect that ask. They're also going to want to know, does this mean your loyalty is in question if you don't get any more biscuits?
You know,
mean that you're going to start looking elsewhere?
Yeah.
And if so, then they might stop investing in you.
When we were offered the job at GBH, Marjorie had a long list of biscuit requests. I decided to volunteer. Our number is 877-301-8970. 89.7. She's all about the biscuits. What are the three? You're looking for. You're about to go in for a job.
Yes.
Tell the three most important things that the nervous applicant, who's qualified, she or he is basically. What are the three most important things he or she should do or not do to impress that prospective employer?
Think before you answer a question is number one.
Meaning pause and
meaning literally. Hear the question, stop, take a minute, reflect. Make sure you're answering the question. A lot of people will simply hear it. They almost operate like a software program. They hear one keyword in the question and they spiel off on that. It's like, oh, you said the word marketing. That's, you know, here's my marketing speech. And, you know, all you were saying was, you know, you're going to go to the market tonight because there's a storm coming in. So listen, take a moment before responding. Ask intelligent questions.
It's really important you do ask questions,
yes,
right?
Ask,
when they say, do you have any questions? If you say no, then you're a dope. You're not getting the job,
ask
right?
Ask intelligent questions. Think about, I mean, how much would you investigate a company? How much research would you do on a company if you were going to invest a year's salary in that company?
Yeah.
Now how much research should you do if you're thinking about taking a job with them? So ask good questions. Pause a moment before you speak and tell stories. More than citing your accomplishments, tell a story about this is who I am, this is where I come from, this is why you're the next logical place for me to be, and why I'm the next logical person to join your team.
It's really easy for men to decide what to wear. I presume most men at least wear a sport jacket, tie and pants, or maybe even a suit.
You hope they wear pants.
I've worn pants to every interview I've done.
Yeah. Now, what
they
about...
They will remember you
if you don't wear pants. That's another good point.
You don't have to wear a suit, though, necessarily. Sport coat, tie.
It depends. Again, it depends on the business, not for something creative necessarily, but you want to dress for an interview. You want to dress at the most formal level for that profession.
Okay.
Which, you know, if you're interviewing for a job as, I don't know, a butcher or a porn star or something, but, you know, you want to dress at the most formal level for that profession. And everybody understands that, you know, you may be the best dressed person in the room.
But how about for women? I think it's becoming harder and harder for
women.
Yes, particularly young women to decide what to wear to job interviews.
There's nothing wrong. Everybody ought to get... Back in my closet, I call her Old Hillary. Mm-hmm. My black wool pantsuit that it'll never go out of style. It'll never be wildly in style.
Yeah.
And she's great. It's like, you know, whenever I'm having an emergency, whenever I have to, you know, do a business talk or go to an interview or just be in a situation where I know I need to come off as polished and professional, Old Hillary's always there.
Because of the jacket. That's a big thing.
Really, really want to know that your pants or skirt can match your jacket. That's a very important business skill.
But I'm
even if you're not applying for a job in the textile industry, surprisingly.
But I'm serious about the jacket. I mean,
because
some women now think you can go dresses, you can go, you know,
again,
just a skirt
dresses
and the top.
No, again, that might be fine depending on the industry.
Okay.
I mean, if I were going in for, if I were interviewing for a job as a theater critic or a professor or something like that, you know, going into maybe a consultant, a higher ed, I might wear a dress.
Well, here's
absolutely. It's not a highly corporate environment.
The reason Marjorie's asking that question, our number is 877-301-8970. You're listening to Robin Abrams' Misconduct from the Boston Globe, answering your questions about the do's and don'ts of offices hiring, not getting fired, everything. We're going to get to sex at the workplace in a second because you do write about it. Marjorie, you've seen Greater Boston with Emily Rooney, correct?
Oh, yes.
Marjorie, how many times in a row were you a guest on Greater Boston wearing the exact same dress?
Well, I hate to shop, and so I just wear the same thing over and over again.
But you know,
I was ridiculed for
how many times in a row did you wear the same dress?
I don't know, about five times.
Now, is that a problem to wear the same dress on television or at an interview five times in a row?
Same black dress.
What do you think?
Over and over.
Same black dress, different accessories?
No.
I didn't even do the different accessories.
That's bad.
That's why I asked you. You look at me like that's a strange question. I don't think it is that strange a question because some people like myself have had trouble with this my whole life.
Okay,
and I
found this black dress that you really like,
right?
Did it not come in any other colors?
Well, I just bought it and just kept wearing it over and over again.
Well, you should have bought
By the way, she looked great in it.
I'm sure she did, but when you find one of those dresses, you just get it in every color.
Here's the reason I asked this question, too. I have seen people, now I work at a radio station. Mm-hmm. I also worked in newspapers. Mm-hmm. You will see particularly women in their 20s, young women in their 20s, who will come in for job interviews. They don't know how to dress, because I think that
they dress
in a much more casual, sexy way. If you're like over 40, when you were in your 20s, you did the jacket and you did the suit and you looked that way.
Don't bet on it, honey.
Well, maybe not. But you see young people coming in now in very sexy outfits, young women.
Uh-huh.
And
what?
Well, it's funny, actually.
Well, it's amusing you. It's making them feel good. And I don't see on Jim's got a big smile on his face.
If it's a male boss, he doesn't really know what to do because he's...
Look down.
Exactly. Look down.
It's a good way to make sure a guy keeps his eyes on your resume.
Yeah, I guess so. But
well, I see here from your transcript.
Yeah, but you...
But you don't think it's a problem, obviously.
Of course I do.
You do. Okay, fine.
Of course I do.
A variation on that.
It's just, it's their problem to have. It's their problem to solve. And I think... I mean, there are certainly multiple images of women in the media, women in public life who are dressed appropriately,
right.
You know, from Tina Fey to Michelle Obama. It's not like they're lacking work role models.
Okay,
yeah.
So let me read
to
you. I want to read to you from your own piece in the magazine. Again, it's called Misconduct's All-in-One Career Fix-It Guide. This is a little tiny excerpt. It's called Love in the Elevator, is this entry. Think office trysts are uncommon. Think again. 39% of workers said they have dated a coworker at least once, according to a recent survey from CareerBuilder.com. 30% of those lovebirds, I love the expression, ended up at the altar. So that's roughly 10% of people.
Yeah.
Is workplace dating...
Lovebirds was my editor's word.
Or whatever. Yeah, don't blame it on him or her. Is this a bad idea? I mean, does this lead to no good office romances?
Obviously not. Well, The problem with it is when two people have any kind of conflict of interest going on, if it's a direct...
I mean, like a supervisor kind of... Yeah,
exactly.
Of course.
If there's a supervisory relationship or if it's simply a matter of, oh, I don't know, you know, this person is in charge of a budget and the other person's department is affected by that. Mm-hmm. If there's any way the relationship can develop in that direction, then you've got a problem and ideally you want to clear those barriers, get out of the person's immediate...
Yeah,
you know,
that was like a Paul Levy situation. At
exactly.
Beth
Israel.
Well, fine.
He got
exactly.
in a little trouble for that when he was at Beth Israel.
Right.
He was the
Beth
boss
Israel,
hiring
yeah.
a young woman who didn't really have a job description.
See, again, you get your success metrics up front, and obviously her success metrics were, you know, not the ones that were, that you know, we would like to think of.
What's the most common mistake someone makes? I'm into the salary thing because everybody is suffering, you know.
Well,
hold on.
Before you move back to salary, the one thing, though, if you do have a boss-underling kind of relationship, because lots of people date people at work. That's how they meet people at work. There seems to be some. You can disclose that at some point to people.
You can disclose it, but you're still going to lose your credibility.
You're still going to lose your credibility.
You're going to lose your credibility. And as my friend Devin Ryder—
Who loses the credibility, the boss or the underling?
Both.
Okay.
And as my friend Devin Ryder pointed out, which I don't think there was a lot of good stuff on the cutting room floor on this one. I don't think this one made it in. If the relationship breaks up, somebody's got to move on. And if the relationship works out, somebody's got to move on. It just doesn't work. If you want to date somebody that you have a boss underling relationship with, do what I do. Start dating an independent businessman and marry him.
But wait a second. But
it gets
even,
along great.
Forget supervisor and underling, to use Marjorie's term. It seems to
underling.
Me. Well, it was your word, but Marjorie's word, whatever it was.
Peon.
Let's assume it's on an equal plane. Yeah. That's a problem potentially, too.
It's potentially a problem, again, if there's areas of influence that overlap. I mean, if we're equals, but, you know, I'm in programming and I, you know, have some kind of influence over what you do, then there can still be a problem. Secrets are never good. I mean, that was something else. That's something else where you really destroy people's credibility is if you think everyone in the office is so dumb they don't know you're sneaking around. And they're all just sort of sitting back talking about you and thinking you're a real idiot.
Yeah.
if you disclose, then that's one thing. But
you know, you should disclose that you're a real idiot, right?
Gossip in the newsroom.
Sure.
You know
it does a lot for workplace morale generally. It's just very bad for the careers of the actual people having the
So we only
usually. Now I wonder, have we reached equality on this? Is it just as bad for the man as the woman, or is it usually the woman that has to go?
It's usually the person who's in the subordinate position, although, and that is more frequently the woman, but if you've got anything where one person is married and the other one isn't, or if it's a gay situation and sexual orientation has not been discussed, there's a lot of ways it can mess up.
There's a lot of ways
it can work out, too.
The question I think on most people's minds, and this is a tough one, but you only have a minute to answer or less, is it a mistake to Xerox your bare behind at a Christmas party. I mean, many of the people with whom I've worked have done that. Does that
only
I mean,
if you have identifying tattoos?
Other than that, you think it's pretty much okay.
You know, it's a waste of resources. Yeah. I mean, from an environment, if we're supposed to think before we print out our emails, you not just do a selfie and text it around?
Thank you very much. And thereby
save the trees.
On that note, we have to go. Robin Abrams, Misconduct is her other persona. Robin, it's great to see you. Thank you so much. Great to see you. Thanks to you guys for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. You can find us on the web at WGBHnews.org/BPR. Tomorrow, CNN's John King will tell us if the Obama charm offensive is working on a variety of fronts, and we will have yet another live dispatch from Rome as they enter the continent. I'm really excited about it.
I don't know why, but I am.
And speaking of the Pope, we will have a language columnist join us. I'm really looking forward to this too, to tell us if anyone speaks Latin other than the Pope. That's all tomorrow on Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy.
And I am Marjorie Egan. Thank you for listening.
See you tomorrow.